finance projects, human resources projects, operations projects, everything. Having an open mind and communicating to people, I'm not bound by this title of attorney and I don't just want to be the head attorney here. I'm open to doing anything as long as it continues to help me grow as a person. Then it allows me to provide value for this company or wherever I go.
Welcome to the Edge of Excellence podcast. This show is for current and aspiring leaders that are dedicated to showing up every day in their lives with excellence. We break down the careers of those excelling so you can understand what is out there and how to rise up in every field you choose. Let's get the show on the road, shall we? Your host has spent his life promoting global entrepreneurship, helping 20-somethings find their passion, and working to help others achieve excellence. CEO of CollegeWorks, Matt Stewart.
Welcome to the show. Thank you for listening. Pass this one along to your friends that want to look at law as a profession, because we've got Suraj Akosia, and he's going to get deep into corporate counsel and all aspects of law, but what it means to be corporate counsel, why that might be something that's interesting to you. He's also a COO, Chief Operating Officer. We're going to talk about that. He's going to talk about the process of confirmed improvements and contribution to growth. He's going to talk about how to open doors by delivering value. Welcome to the show and welcome to the Edge of Excellence. We got another special show for you today. We got Suraj Akosia here. He's a corporate attorney and a COO. If you want to be a lawyer, what else do you want to do? Maybe chief operations officer of a large corporate conglomerate. He's got a solid family. He's a community member. He's delivering value everywhere. Suraj, welcome to the show and welcome to the Edge of Excellence.
Hey, Matt. Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
It's great to have you. Suraj, before we go way back to where you were way back when, and before we get deep into law and operations and the corporate world, which our listeners don't know much about, and so we're going to get all this information from you and deliver it to them so they can make decisions on where they're going to go if they go to law school, what's going to happen if they're kind of that mindset but don't want to go to law school, what if they want to do both. But before we get there, Suraj, what is your definition of excellence?
Yeah, that's a good question, Matt. I think I used to think that excellence was being the best or really good at something. It was all you, Matt, being the best at something. Okay. I'd say now, I think that excellence is the process of continued improvement. There's always an opportunity to learn and grow. And that's what I believe excellence is, the constant process of learning and growing.
You know, Michael Jordan, or any of the athletes you can think of, or any of the greats, they still get better the next day. They're still getting better and better. Wisdom comes with time and experience, and they're adding time and experience and practice. So they can be excellent and continue to get even better at that excellent level.
That's exactly right. You look, Kobe Bryant won a championship. The next year, he's still out there practicing every single day to get better, to build his teammates, to build himself. That's exactly it.
We'll pause there before we go back into high school and college. Of all the people you know that do a variety of different professional things, and you know your wife's a doctor, you know lawyers, you know business people, you may know politicians, you may name clergy members. What percentage of them are, you know, they got out of college where they're constantly working on themselves, getting better? What percentage of them are still striving to get better in whatever profession they're doing? Not their sports that they're playing, not, you know, their family, but better in just the profession.
It's a good question, Matt. I'd say probably over 50% of the people that I associate with, maybe over 75% of the people that are within my network, are constantly pushing and striving for more.
Okay, and out of all those people, over 75% are constantly striving for more. What percentage of the ones are you really investing time into that are striving for more? What percent are the ones you're investing time into striving for more?
That's a really good question, Matt. Probably not enough would be the answer to that question, but...
Close to 100 anyway?
Yeah, close to 100.
Now, I'm not counting the Y Guys family that comes to you and you have to spend time with them, but I just thought of that. You're spending time growing professionally, and you're mountain biking, and you're regular biking, and you're working on a variety of different things, but you're constantly working on spinning all the plates, getting better at spinning all the plates. I'm doing that. The people we spend time with, when we want to spend time with, they're doing that. That's a good side note. If you're listening right now in the car, remember, don't take notes while you're driving. Pull over, stop your car. We've got an attorney on the podcast with us today. And then take your notes. Be listening to us at 1.5 speed because Suraj speaks too slow and you need to speed him up. But yeah, everybody's constantly striving to get a little bit better. And there are people that don't, but we don't hang out with them. And there are people that don't that come into our spheres, but we eventually kind of move away from them because they're not adding value. We talk about networking once in a while. You got to add value, and you add value by constantly working and trying to get better. But you got me off script, Suraj, like you always do. It's your fault if I say anything wrong, Suraj. Let's go back to where you were in high school. What was life like for you in high school? Where were you going? What were you doing? And were you working to get ahead? And I've known you for a long time. You've been working to conquer and get ahead for as long as I know you. But was it that way, way back when?
No, I don't think so. I think in high school, I was probably just trying to be one of the popular kids, right? Trying to find my footing.
What a waste of time. I mean, how much time do people in high school work to be the popular kids? And by the way, the popular kids later in life, a lot of them aren't, because being mean and womanizing and drinking too much and being out of control and being a showboat, all that weird stuff in high school that may make you popular makes you unpopular later in life. So at about 22, it changes, and kindness, delivering value, lifting others, that's what makes you popular later in life. So you were a little confused as to what the path was, as was I, in high school, trying to be popular. Keep going.
Yeah. So, I mean, I played sports, played a lot of video games. Again, I started dating my wife in high school, and I was just trying to have a good time.
Okay. So were you in sports and getting good grades in pursuit of a future goal, or you're just trying to be popular and you don't care about being a lawyer or marrying a doctor or any of that stuff?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I'd say culturally, there's always this pressure, that there was always this pressure on me to go to college, to get a master's degree, to either become a doctor, a lawyer, pharmacist, something like that. So it was never really a question of, should I do this? It was always this expectation that I needed to do this. And it was really just how hard I was pushing to do it. Yeah, exactly right.
Okay. So you're under pressure and you know that you're going to do these sports and you're going to do whatever extracurriculars, you're going to get good grades to further what you know that there's no other way in life for you to do but end up in a good college.
That's right.
And where'd you go to college?
I went to Cal State Fullerton.
Oh, where'd you go to high school?
Canyon High School in Anaheim Hills.
Right, okay, I thought it was Irvine. So Canyon High School, you go from Canyon High School to Cal State Fullerton. And when you get to Cal State Fullerton, what was life like? What were you like?
What was life like? I would say that I started working my first year of college. So I was working part-time and going to school. And I don't think I had a great experience in college. So I was doing everything I could to get the hell out of there, to graduate as fast as I could, because it was not where I wanted to be.
Why don't you transfer to a different school that you'd have a better experience at?
You know, it's a good question. I don't know why.
So I'll just stop there again. College is for thriving it. So, and it's okay. It's okay to not be thriving and want to work and get the hell out and do your best and move. That's one option. Another option is to change schools. But if you're listening right now and you don't know where you want to go to college, start off by asking yourself where you're going to thrive. And my kids both go to really challenging schools, and it worried me at first because, you know, there's a lot of pressure and maybe they don't feel like the smartest kid in the class. By the time they get to senior year, they feel maybe that way. But where are you going to thrive? Where are you going to have confidence? Where are you going to have a good time? Where are you going to be able to get your work done at optimal rate? You're wanting to get out. You're on the opposite side. You didn't transfer. Maybe not at the right place, but you excelled to get out faster.
That's right. I graduated in 3.5 years. I wouldn't say I did fantastic in college, but definitely above average. Did pretty well.
And did you know where you wanted to go, what you wanted to do by that point in time?
I had definitely decided when I was close that I did not want to go to med school. I was still getting a lot of pressure to go to med school or at least become a pharmacist. But I think by the time I was ready to graduate, I had decided to either continue my career in business. So I graduated with a management degree or go to law school. And I thought that law school would be more challenging for me. So I took the
LSAT?
The LSAT, yep, took the LSAT.
You blocked it out of your mind, have you?
It was a very difficult process. Took the LSAT and applied to law school.
So there is a cultural element to some people's families where there's pressure from many generations before them. And maybe their grandparents are living, maybe their parents are living, maybe older siblings or aunts and uncles, to, in some cultures, to get some letters behind your degree. And so you're feeling, you don't care what the letters are. Sometimes it's specific, MD only, or whatever the letters are. But there's pressure to get some letters behind your degree. You start in Canyon High School, you understand that pressure. You get into college, and you at least decide, okay, I'm going to go the legal or business path. So you start going that direction. You ruled out medicine because you passed out at the sight of blood?
No, I think it was just, I didn't take any science classes. Oh. I enjoyed blood. I mean, I enjoyed all those things. I don't know why I didn't do medicine. I think it was maybe just the total amount of pressure that was being put on me at the time to go that route and to try and do something different. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. I passed out outside of blood, as you may or may not know. Has to be a lot, though. Has to be a lot. So you decide at Cal State Fullerton, you're going to pursue either business or law. And then how'd you pick law?
I thought it's harder. Law was a harder thing for me. Okay. I wanted something challenging and decided to go to law school.
Okay.
And I took a business law class in college, and I really connected with the professor and just enjoyed what he was going through.
And so when you're in Cal State Fullerton, were you working hard to separate yourself from the other students? Were you doing jobs, internships, being the head of the review board, anything like that? Or were you just getting out?
Yeah, so I'd say definitely was not working hard to get ahead in terms of like joining clubs and being head of the review board. I was working at the time. I had a couple really good internships that helped me. I worked for an asset management firm that was where a bunch of attorneys were working. And that really opened my eyes to what I could do outside of just, I can get a law degree, but it just didn't limit me to practicing law. There were so many other things that I could do.
Okay, so you're in an asset management internship and you're noticing there's other professionals there. So I think that's a good pause button for someone listening right now. Think about, where are you working right now? What are other people doing? What professions do other people have? And then I'm assuming you went and talked to these people.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I worked underneath them. I asked if they could mentor me and worked underneath them.
So you're over here doing asset management internship and you go across the hall or across or to a different floor and you say, hey, I've noticed you. How does that conversation go?
Yeah, so it's, hey, tell me about yourself. What do you do? I really like what you're working on. Is there any way that I can work on your team? Can I participate? Do you have any extra work that you can give me? And when I started at that firm, we got thrown in the back organizing financial information. Literally, at that time, it was all paper. So pulling information, organizing in binders, but still taking every opportunity I had to talk to the people that were there. And eventually, they noticed and picked me up, and I was able to work on other teams.
This wasn't your job after school. This is why you're still in school that you're doing this.
Correct, yes.
Okay, so you're still in school. It's not a summer job. It's a year-round job you're doing.
It was a six-month job that I had there. Yes, correct. Okay.
So you're still at school doing an internship slash job sort of thing. You're in one department and you're kind of learning about that one department. You start exploring. So that's the first key, explore. Explore around your job. And then you start engaging, which is pretty brave if you think about it. And you changed departments?
I changed the person that I was working with. Yes, I moved around back and forth with people.
And that culture was cool with that, or you just did that? Was that part of their culture, or you kind of...
Yeah, the culture was okay. The culture was okay with that. They knew that
happened.
They knew that I was young there and I wanted to learn. So they were okay with it.
Okay, well, I think there's three lessons there. One, explore. Two, engage. And three, look out for yourself. So they knew because of your interview process or whatever that you were looking to get the most out of it. Look out for number one. Okay, so you're doing this asset management. And you're going to college, and from the asset management, going down that business path, you decide, okay, I'm not going to go down financial planning, asset management, financial consulting, whatever, all that stuff that you were probably exploring, engaging, and looking out for yourself in. You switch over to the legal career, and it was then you decided to go to law school.
Yeah.
And where'd you go to law school?
I went to Chapman Law School.
I knew that. You want to know why I know that?
I would like to, yeah.
Because Anna Mack, you and Anna Mack went to the same law school, DJ Era, for those of you into music, Anna Mack Oration, for those of you that have been prosecuted, and probably none of my listeners. So you're at Chapman, which Chapman was had a wonderful headmaster right about the time you were going there. And everybody's heard of Chapman now, and they've heard of the film studies at Chapman, and there's a great law school at Chapman. But back then, Chapman was up and coming. So you're hitting Chapman right as it gets its stride, right as it gets the new buildings and the prestige that it continues to get, continues to receive. You wanted to stay local. So everything's been pretty local here. You didn't want to move out of California.
I did want to move out of California, but my family wanted me to stay local. So I ended up staying local.
Wow, dude. Wow, most of our listeners can't relate to this. They're not going to listen to their parents at all. But you're consistently looking out for them when you're young, and you made maybe some sacrifices, and then it pays you back later because now you have your family near you still to this day, and they help you with raising your kids, and that's pretty nice. But at the time, it felt like a little bit of a sacrifice to stay close.
Definitely. It was a big sacrifice. And even now, sometimes it still feels like a big sacrifice.
And then, you want me to bleep that out? And then serendipitously, your kind of career changed because of that. So you went to Chapman, you're local to Orange County, you're living local to Orange County. And then one day you end up working with National Services Group as a legal, you were a lawyer, but you came to kind of learn about business law, right, at first?
That's right. So I started here, when I graduated, I come from a family of small business owners. So they wanted me to start my own business. Graduating, like, Suraj, when are you opening up your own law firm? When is this happening? How can we start marketing for you? And there was an opportunity here. And I thought it was a good opportunity for me, one, to sort of cut my teeth and learn something. And two, in-house positions are very coveted. They're hard to get. And so I didn't want to turn a blind eye to what I thought was an excellent opportunity, even though it was short term. So I took it.
Are you enjoying the show thus far? We go through so many resources and links with this podcast, it's tough to keep up. I get it. That's why Matt and the rest of the team put together the Edge of Excellence Bundle. In it, you'll find different tools that relate to overarching themes and topics of the show. Things like DISC assessment tools, time management strategies and tactics, stress and anxiety management tools, exclusive videos and episodes from this podcast that is not released anywhere else, and so much more. The best part? As a valued listener of the show, you can access the Edge of Excellence Bundle 100% for free of charge. That's right, for simply being awesome and tuning in. To get access, all you have to do is go to www.collegeworks.com/podcast and fill out the short form there for us to get the bundle over to you. Once again, it's www.collegeworks.com/podcast. Now, back to the show.
All right. So you're back to, first of all, continuous improvement. So you're constantly looking for this continuous improvement, constantly looking to learn, and you're doing it in the internship in college, and then you get this job and you're looking for a little bit of learning. You're constantly exploring, engaging, and looking out for opportunities. And so you start off, and I was there. You could have gotten more money, could have gotten way worse hours, I'm sure, but more money, probably some prestigious firm name, direct training under some pretty prestigious lawyers if you went and worked for Stradling Yoka or one of the other big brands around here. And you came and you worked as the second person in a one-person legal department, right?
That's right.
Okay, did, yeah. So, wow, that's crazy. Why would anybody listening here ever want to skip a mega opportunity like Stradling Yoka, Carlson & Roth, shout out to Brian Forbath, and come work at this small construction company with a two-person legal team?
So in-house counsel positions are unique in that you don't have 30 to 40 or sometimes hundreds of clients. You have one client. You make decisions and you get to see the immediate impact of those. You live with the decisions that you get to make. You build relationships with people. You know and learn your business in and out. And the type of impact that you get to have being in-house versus working for a firm, I think, is very, very different.
So you're weighing your options. And if you're listening right now, maybe you don't know about in-house counsel. So you wanted to go deep with one client instead of maybe deeper with a couple, pretty not so deep with a few, really shallow with others. You wanted to get in. You also said you own the result. So you're there for the good or bad. You're there while it's being implemented. You're there adjusting the implementation. You're there at the maintenance level. You wanted to be part of that. And you felt that way, you'd be much more of an impact to the business than just being their attorney on retainer or attorney on an hourly basis.
That's right. That's absolutely right. And also just, I've got a family of, again, small business owners. And so being around this was what I wanted to do and eventually springboard my career into potentially something different, right? I'm not sure. When I graduated, I didn't know if being an attorney was something I'd do for the rest of my life. Being in-house would give me the opportunity to learn a bunch of different industries because I'd be around those people.
Yeah. And if you play the game right and you go into being in-house counsel or you go into one of those C-level roles, and Pete, who you worked with before, went and did that in the mortgage business, you end up getting equity. So maybe you didn't start the business from scratch and go through all the years of slow growth. But when it gets big and maybe there is an exit, you still get the benefit like an entrepreneur.
That's right. That's exactly right.
And your pay goes up and down just like an entrepreneur. So you can never project what you're going to make in a single year.
There's that too. Like I said, I am a family of small business owners. So I'm very used to pay going up and down.
Okay. So you seem to have had this master plan, not of where you're going directly, but it seems to be this kind of funnel. And the funnel ratchets down a little bit, ratchets down a little bit, ratchets down a little bit. But there's different options of where Suraj could go. The key to this, though, is exploring, figuring out those options, engaging, discovering what's going on, looking for these different opportunities. And also the key, by the way, is doing a really good job, working hard and doing a really good job. So you start off Financial Services Group as the secondary attorney, and then you become the lead attorney. And then you become, in addition to lead attorney, chief operations officer. So why don't we talk a little bit? We got a little bit into what it means to be in-house counsel. And anybody can go become the COO. They can come from the finance route. They can come from the sales route and business development route. They can come from the operations route. They can come from the legal route. They can come from any of the routes. It's someone that's good at systemizing things, training things, working on operations to get things done, strategically thinking. What's the role of an operations officer in a couple hundred million dollar business, in a $10 million business, and in a big business? What do you do on a daily basis now? What will you be doing in a couple years in the $1 billion business? And what do people do in small companies in that operational role if they're not also an attorney?
So I'd say what I do right now, I spend still probably 50% of my time at least doing legal work. And then in terms of the remainder of the operations, a lot of it comes to managing people, like looking at what they're doing, holding them accountable, looking at problems that they're having, coming up with solutions to those problems. Yeah, I think a lot of what I do right now is people management and building processes and solving problems.
Yeah, so problems that people are having, how can we streamline it? But there's a systems base to that. How can we streamline it with nowadays AI, nowadays with virtual employees, nowadays with systems that are out there or platforms that are out there. I know we changed our accounting software. We change a variety of the different systems to help people solve the problem. And the COO sees all the departments. So there may be somebody in the accounting department that wants to do one thing. The operations is working with accounting, customer service, accounts payable, accounts receivable, finance, technology, every aspect of sales, business development. And so they're seeing everybody's problems. And you have to have that mindset of being somewhat detail-oriented and somewhat systems-oriented, as well as be a good salesperson to sell it to the people, as well as be a good leader. So you're listening to their ideas and helping them implement. So you have this overall view of the business with an overall view of the problem that maybe people don't see in their individual department, and therefore maybe a better way to solve it, or at least facilitate a better way. So a lot of your job, I would guess, is facilitating discussion, facilitating direct discussion between people that maybe don't understand that they're facing the same problem, or maybe they're even creating problems to somebody else. And so half your job now is as your lead counsel overseeing a legal department. And we'll get into that a little bit. The other half is the chief operations officer oversees all of the operations. usually outside of finance that's separated with the chief financial officer. And so half your job's doing that. And then maybe at a billion-dollar business, what happens? What changes then?
Yeah, so for me, I'd imagine at a billion-dollar business, I probably do less, perform less and less legal work and look at further integrating processes and people. And it's sort of taking what we have now and being able to multiply it across multiple different departments and building out mid-level managers and executive managers and that sort of stuff.
Same thing, more help, basically.
Yep, that's exactly right, yeah.
So if you're listening right now, maybe you got the legal mindset. We're going to get a little bit more into the law here in a second. But if you're listening right now and you like problem solving and you can think systematically, take the DISC score, take the DISC test. If you're an S, if you're a C, if you're an I, if you're a D, they all work in operations. And there's an episode, I believe episode 3, you can listen to about the DISC score. But if you like solving problems and you like working with other people and you like leading a team to solving problems and doing things quicker, faster, better, cheaper, being COO might be a career opportunity to look at. And then on the other side is the legal and in-house counsel and corporate counsel. Everybody when they, well, not everybody, but me when I was a kid, used to watch all the law shows. And you got Law and Order and you got Perry Mason. I didn't watch that. I'm not that old. But you had all these law. I did watch a couple of them though. You have all these law shows and it's all about being in front of the jury and arguing the case. And you have someone that works in the legal department that's that type of lawyer. But the majority of lawyers aren't that. So in-house attorney or corporate counsel, what is the legal side of your job most of the time?
Yeah. So I'd say one, it depends on the type of company that you're working for. So when I first started here, we were a pretty small company. So I was required to wear a bunch of different hats. I was reviewing contracts, drafting contracts, dealing with employee disputes. I was in a courtroom because that's what the job had required me to do. As our company has grown, I now see less time in a courtroom and I'll hire experts who can go to court for me, so actual litigators. But I do everything, you know, and we have our own insurance company. You name it, I've probably practiced every single type of law that's out there. And I think that's, to me, that's what I really enjoy about the legal practice here, is it's not being an expert in any one specific area. It's the opportunity to be an expert in a bunch of different areas of law.
So a lot of lawyers might be contract lawyers, or they might be immigration attorneys, or they might be employment lawyers, or they might be litigators, or they might be insurance attorneys. A general counsel gets to practice all the forms of law. They may not be the greatest expert in any one of those things, but they have a general understanding and a general competency in all of it, enough to be able to hire the best experts as they need them.
That's right.
And so you're hiring, we have an HR department that helps, but you're hiring, you're helping people set goals, you're managing in the law firm as lead counsel and delegating as lead counsel, and then you move into the COO role. Now you just do that in all the departments.
That's right. Yep.
Any important aspect of the job of COO or head legal counsel that we're missing for that 24-year-old driving down the street very carefully and about to pull over and take notes?
I think for me, what's always worked for me is willing to take on new tasks that maybe didn't that fall within my role, right? So when I first started here, there was a big sort of insurance issue with some new pending regulation that didn't necessarily need to be solved by an attorney, but it was something that I raised my hand and said, hey, I'm happy to jump on that and take it. And I found that not putting my position within a box and being willing to take on any type of work has really helped me progress. And that's, if your listeners take one thing away, I'd say that that's what it would be,
so
is having an open mind.
When you started, I said, explore, engage, look out for number one, and I changed it halfway through this discussion, because that's not, I couldn't write that down with Siraj, because that just doesn't make sense with Siraj's personality. I wrote down the second time, explore, engage, look for opportunities. So you were exploring, you were engaging, and the opportunities you were looking for wasn't for Siraj, it was for the business. And that's the difference between becoming the COO and just staying as that entry-level attorney. Are you constantly looking to do things to help the business? And people in Gen Z, listen up. You got to stop thinking about what the business is going to do for you, because when you deliver value to the business, what for you comes later. So Siraj came in as an attorney and already is COO. I guarantee he wants to be CEO. You should hear some of the things he says to me. And that happens because of competency. And if you think about exploring, looking out for different things you like, you're going to have unique ability and you're going to make an impact in engaging, taking extra things, doing more, doing a great job. And then you're looking for opportunities to implement more. And then people notice. Now, I will say, Suraj, it goes beyond people just noticing. You do have to voice it to people. So you told the internship in the beginning, hey, I'm here to learn. And they bought on. It was part of their culture. You moved around. You told the people at NSG, hey, I want to explore different things. I want to try. I've heard it many times. I want to try out all the different types of law. You didn't necessarily say, I want to be in the COO position. I think you said, I did want to do that. But people see your aptitude and are looking for avenues to give you more space to shine, I guess, when you're constantly exploring, engaging, and doing different things and getting better at different things and delivering value.
Yeah, I think that's right. I've tried not to be limited by my title of attorney, right? I've looked at, again, finance projects, human resources projects, operations projects, everything. Having an open mind and communicating to people, I'm not bound by this title of attorney and I don't just want to be the head attorney here. I'm open to doing anything as long as it continues to help me grow as a person. And it allows me to provide value for this company or wherever I go.
Yeah, everybody's winning. All right, well, I want to respect our time. When did you realize you were on the edge of excellence, Suraj?
You know, honestly, Matt, I think that's something recently that I've begun to realize. A couple of years ago, I ran a half Ironman, which I thought was really fun to do, and recognized that we can do anything, that individuals can do anything that they want to accomplish. It just takes time and practice and continuous improvement. And that's why I've sort of changed the way that I think about what excellence is. It's not about being great or being born great. It's about that continuous process improvement to getting there.
And you don't realize until you're already past it.
That's exactly right. Happens.
And the people that are trying to, that's not what gets you there. The people that are delivering value, exploring, engaging, looking for the opportunities, even when they are excellent, continuing to always do better, those are the ones that find that they have already passed that edge of excellence. I got one more question for you, then I'm going to let you go. It's my favorite question. What sacrifices did you make in your 20s that at the time just seemed like the worst idea? For me, I didn't go to Mallorca, Spain with my family. I stayed home, but it was just life-changing for me. And I'm so glad I never went to Mallorca with the family. What sacrifice did you make that you think about and go, thank God I did that?
Yeah, I'd say until recently, well, it's been number one is money. Law school was expensive. I put myself in a lot of debt to go through law school. And now I'm starting to recognize the value and the benefit of doing that. And I think the other thing is time. I had a lot of friends who didn't end up going to law school, or didn't go to graduate school, and they graduate from high school and they're all having a good time, or excuse me, graduate from college, we're having a great time. And I'm sitting there reading books, going to class every single day, and it was very difficult to do. But I am very glad that I went through that.
Yeah, you got to pay the piper sometime. Better to have that time when you have a wonderful family to spend it with than when you're with your buddies. I know you're not doing what most of them are doing, but I see them around here sometimes. And when I say around here, I mean up in that room over there, smoking weed and drinking, like, get out there and do something, damn it. Well, Suraj, I really appreciate you making time from your busy schedule today. I did notice a couple of people hand you papers while we were talking. You should lock that door. Appreciate the insight. I think we got really, really deep. Thank you for being a wonderful person, for looking for opportunities, for engaging and exploring and dragging me along for the ride. And thank you for coming on the Edge of Excellence.
Thank you for having Matt. Thank you for having me, Matt. I appreciate being here and you giving me an opportunity to share my story.
All right.
I hope you enjoyed that episode today on the Edge of Excellence podcast. Make sure to hit subscribe on whichever platform you're listening to this. If this episode made you think of someone, go ahead, take a screenshot and share this exact episode with them. This show exists to showcase what is possible when young leaders are willing to step out of their comfort zone and choose to excel in their lives. To learn more about our internship for young and ambitious students, www.oneinternship.com/podcast to see if it's something that makes sense for you. Once again, it is www.oneinternship.com/podcast. Let this be a reminder for you to live on the edge of excellence in your business and life. See you next time.